But tonight we're here for Jay Babcock, who is the of this amazing publication called Arthur. I'd just like to tell you, read a quote from you from Abbie Hoffman's classic Woodstock Nation, written by, well, another American saint, John Sinclair. "We're moving towards a conscious community of artists and lovers who live together, work together, share all things, smoke dope together, dance and fuck together, and spread the word together every way we can, through our dress, our freedom of movement, our music and dance, our economy, our human social forms, through every breath on this planet." Right on. Our guest here tonight, Jay, we invited him to speak. We have this series that we're kind of hosting called, what's the name of it? Inventing an Anti-War Culture. He's our second speaker in this event. Later on this month, we're just going to have a day of film screenings of films, documentaries that have been produced in the last year or so about the current political and social climate. If you want to be on our email list to receive notes about it, you can sign up on the back. There's also posters over there and magazines that you're more than welcome to take. So that's that business. Jay Babcock, two facts about him. He used to work for Henry Waxman, the congressman, and Larry Flint. He began Arthur in the year 2002. So without further ado, Jay Babcock.
Thanks, Robbie. So this talk's sponsored by Red Bull, and I think there's still some more in the icebox if anyone wants any, or maybe just beer. Right. So, where's Joe? Joe's disappeared.
He'll back. I'll run again.
Okay. Yeah. Robbie invited me to talk about inventing an anti-war culture and my thoughts on that, and this all sort of grew out of a talk we had in my kitchen with Robbie sir, about that and all. And I sort of I don't really know how to address that question except to talk more about what Arthur is, why we do it, what its sort of underlying themes and general aim is, and why we keep doing it despite ended up with no money. Because I was going to say after that wonderful John Sinclair quote that the last time I saw him, I gave him $10 and he said, "You made my day." No, you really made my day. And, those dreams, 40 years later are were difficult to sustain for a lot of reasons. So I guess I'll, with Robbie's guidance here, because he'll sort of tell me when I need to talk more about something in particular, or I'm not making sense, or I'm straying off target, Robbie will sort of steer me back to it.
Are we okay if people chime in from the audience?
And other people can too, especially if I'm just muttering away or something. I assume everyone, most people here are familiar with Arthur, but I'll go over it really fast. It's a magazine started 3 years ago. It's a free national bi-monthly publication. Comes out every 2 months. We have a print run of 50,000 copies now. I do it in partnership with Lars Kreslins, who's back east, who was for most of the time we've been doing it was living in his parents' basement. The magazine is completely independently owned, independently funded, independently operated. Neither of us, unfortunately, are trust funders, which means that the magazine has been funded two ways, credit cards, our own, and the labor of other people, and which gets to one of the themes of what I want to talk about, which is we want to make, the magazine is done, it's, I said independently owned and independently operated, but it's, which makes people think, oh, it's a DIY. Oh, it's so cool, you guys. But it's not DIY. It's what I call a DIO, which is, I think, the next iteration of the DIY idea, which is do it ourselves. And we couldn't do it on our own. We had to do it collectively, which is a bit of, about what John Sinclair was saying in that quote, I guess. It was like we were going to do it together. And that's the only way we could have done it, was to have people contribute articles for nothing, professional writers writing for nothing, writing for the love of it, writing for the ability, for the freedom of it. And the same thing for the photographers and the artists. The magazine is distributed. Because it's a free magazine, it doesn't go to newsstands, it goes to non-newsstands. It's distributed by a gigantic network of volunteers. I think we have got over 100 people now in 120 cities or something, that hit 800 locations. And what we do is we print the magazine and send boxes of 100, sometimes more boxes than one, to people, and then they decide where to put it in the town, where, you know, where it will get to the people who they think will be into it and get something out of it. So it's sort of hyper-targeted. And the magazine, we don't print 50,000 copies and leave them at a, you know, at Save-On or something, where it's just going to be used for, you know, for the bird cages or something. So the whole thing is put together as, you know, using a group of volunteers. And then the other funding comes from credit cards. But it's been, after 3 years, we seem to be turning the corner, and our advertising revenues are up, and which helps fund the magazine, and we're starting to be able to boost our circulation. We're holding a festival on Labor Day weekend at Barnstall here in Los Angeles that should be fun. And I'm beginning to see some of the things that we didn't set in motion, but sort of helped along, are starting to come into fruition, or it's just a coincidence. It's probably both. Arthur is done in the tradition of self-consciously done in the tradition of underground magazines and underground culture. There's a book by what's his name? Are You Serious? I forget what his real name is, but on the history of counterculture, and he goes all the way back to, you know, like Abraham or something, and you know, it's a little far-fetched, but whatever. There is a continuum of an underground that goes pretty far back, and if you want to just stay inside the United States, you can go back to, you know, Thomas Paine or something. But it all periods through American history. You've had underground publications that are sort of have a self-selecting audience and have a sort of general approach of where they embrace a gradually expanding sphere of personal freedom, and they always sort of burst the limits of contemporary ideas of what is acceptable expression. Now sometimes they are part of an already existing culture of, you know, perhaps poets or novelists or dissidents, or sometimes they're done by, like, they sort of begin a culture. You know, you could argue that maybe like someone like I.F. Stone, who ran basically a zine, when you think about it, out of his, you know, on his own for years, and he helped carry on a tradition of paying attention to government, paying very close attention to government, and publicizing what you find. And anyway, I think that influenced quite a few journalists who went and worked in mainstream press. But, so what I'm saying is that there's sometimes the magazines, the publications, because sometimes they're very small, sometimes they're very big, push something forward. Sometimes they are documenting something that's already going on. For Arthur, the one, you know, the stuff that we were most interested in, or the models that we, the closest models that we had for what we were doing, with stuff like Rolling Stone in the late 60s, early 70s, which was a very interesting magazine at that time. And then some other publications since then, the NME and the Melody Maker in the 80s and 90s, magazine called Slash that was about punk culture in the 70s and early 80s, published out of Los Angeles. The research publications that came out in the 80s that were sort of these bound, you know, most people are probably familiar with them, they're sort of bound books that sort of had this catalytic effect. They seemed to always capture what was going on, but also to push it forward and push it out and let people know more about what sorts of things they could try, whether it was pranks or a certain style of music or something, or a certain way of thinking about the world. Now, with Arthur, our sort of problem was that, unlike these other magazines, we didn't really emerge out of a parent scene. There is no scene that we don't come out of. Because it's a national magazine, where it's not like we're going, dude, this is what's going on in Los Angeles. Angelinos, wake up, you know, I mean, check it out. There's so much exciting shit going on, and have that constant local feedback. We also weren't following a certain style of music, so it wasn't like, say, Herb was, or where they were like, rave music, electronic music, all right, you know, this is the only place you're going to read about it. We weren't interested in covering one kind of music or one space. So what were we then? We were interested in it all. We were interested in the sort of the ever-flowing underground. And I've saw, you know, a sort of, what is the phrase? Sort of a subculture of the head or something, you know, sort of a, we're taking on the general themes of underground culture and putting them out there through interviews, features, reviews, and of all sorts of things. Now, getting back to sort of, what does this have to do with building the anti-war culture so forth. I'm not so interested in building in an anti-war culture as I am to, I was thinking about this because, you know, Becky Stark said, you know, half these things I'm saying have already been said much better by other people, you know, that you guys, or things you guys have already thought. But I was talking to Becky Stark and she goes, well, you know, why can't they say growing a peace culture? Why does it have to be anti? And I like the idea of a peace culture, but I still think, you know, there's a place for war or whatever. But so what I wanted to say is, why don't we build a post-war culture, and think about it that way, in which we start saying, there's a new, actually to go along with this, there's a new Devendra Banhart song where he says, it's on the new record, it's very simple, we don't want to kill. Which I thought, that about does it. Because I don't really want to do that. So let's try and get to that point where we're not asked to kill, we're not asking others to kill on our behalf. And finally, we're not benefiting from others killing. In other words, we're post-war. These are tough times to have those ideals because they seem because they're not out there very much. The so-called anti-war crowd or the left or whatever seems to be extremely silent or boring and not very imaginative. We saw this last year at the Republican National Convention, which was in New York, and which took full advantage of being there near the September 11th date. And we were told to expect hundreds of thousands of dissidents and liberals and leftists and anti-war activists and anti-Bush people and people baking pies for Kerry and so forth would suddenly come to New York and shut the thing down. And I actually for a while thought that was going to happen, and I was telling people, yeah, you know, get your, be ready for the tear gas, look out for the curfew, don't schedule shows, they're not going to happen. And what ended up happening was, it was essentially, well, we all know what happened, was it was all It was essentially a training ground on a police, for the police, where they got to try out new techniques of crowd control. You know, they were, we all heard the stories, oh, they're warehousing people, or they've got these weird nets, and the networks aren't paying attention. We're doing our really creative bungee jump off of a building or something, and no one knows except for the people that watch public access or whatever, and who listen to KPFK. And to me, this was a sort of final confirmation that the anti-war crowd and the post-war culture in this country was just absolutely bereft of imagination and inspiration. So part of how we address that, because we're very concerned, I mean, when I say we, I mean the magazine and almost all the people who work with us, except for Joe Carducci, who's hopeless. The idea behind Arthur is to try and find avenues to broaden the imagination and then to show you ways to think about things, to show you different techniques to think about, to do things, to be groups together, to do get things done, and so forth. And so the idea being, if you need, that politics is very important, but in order to deal in the political world, you have to come to it with a degree of imagination. You have to be able to say, I can visualize. I mean, this is a world where there isn't this war going on. And I can visualize a protest that's more effective. And I can imagine things. I can outthink the cops. I can out-imagine the right wing. I can stomp on the neocons. And so you have to find the, you know, what's